We're back with more of Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. Trainspotting debuted in 1996, directed by Danny Boyle. Based on the Irvine Welsh novel of the same name, the film followed a group of friends and heroin addicts trapped in the Edinburgh drug scene and the challenges each faces to stay in or get out. It was a gritty, brutal, and bleakly funny film, and it launched the career of Ewan McGregor.
Flash forward 20 years later, and Trainspotting 2 brings the original cast back together under Boyle's direction. Renton, Spud, Sick Boy, and Begbie are 20 years older, but not necessarily wiser. Film contributor Dave Lurson says that although T2 may be middle-aged, it is by no means any less relevant.
Poverty, narcotics, no future. The characters from Trainspotting, the 1996 film, seemed ill-fated to see Y2K, much less survive into the second decade of the new millennium. Yet here they are, worse for wear or not, in the sequel, T2 Trainspotting.
Aside from nostalgia, and also, as you mentioned, the unlikeliness that any of these characters would still be alive 20 years from now, what do you think the running focus of doing the sequel was?
Well, nostalgia, let's start with that. That's kind of the easy part. I think it's nostalgia for the director, Danny Boyle, and Ewan McGregor, the lead actor who became a star. Both of them, became globally well-known as a result of this movie. They had both been doing things in Britain and building a reputation there before Trainspotting. But this was their ticket to world cinema acclaim. So that, I'm sure there is some personal nostalgia here, but there's also something I think very deeply felt about the story, the scenario, and the characters. What I find really interesting, among other things, about the Trainspotting story and the sequel is how local, yet how universal it is. There are some very, local things, but we can also equate them to local things going on here in America. One example, there's a scene in T2 of a Protestant extremist bar where the characters end up, the Protestants are celebrating a defeat centuries ago of Catholics, and our protagonists have to come up with an anti-Catholic song on the fly to get out of there without being beat up.
Right.
Well, we're not likely to find that exactly here in America, but what about, extreme redneck kinds of places that people a little different might be very uncomfortable in? And I would remind people, too, that the Ku Klux Klan of our own country hated Roman Catholics and Jews almost as much as African Americans. So it's not entirely a disconnect. The bigger theme, of course, is drug abuse. 20 years ago, heroin was already a great scourge in many places around the world. And between heroin and other kinds of opioids have proliferated since that time, the problem has only deepened, has gotten worse. So the film is taking a look at some of the choices that people have made. When does rebelliousness and kicking against a corrupt system in society turn into self-destruction?
Well, and do you think T2 was less about the tragedies of addiction as the first one was and more of a resolution of this group's friendship? Some of the characters were still using. Ewan McGregor's character, Mark, was clean for so long since he left Scotland, and he comes back to meet the three friends who, one's in jail from everything, Spud is still using, and Johnny Lee Miller, his character, moved on to cocaine and perhaps some other things, but it wasn't as much about the effects and the tragedies of heroin as the first one was. We had some pretty intense scenes in the first one.
Right, and here we have a movie that's a bit more about reflecting on one's past. There's a homecoming aspect to this, of course, through the Ewan McGregor character of Mark. There's kind of making a sort of restitution for past mistakes as a theme. Growing older, on the basis of one's choices in life. You can't go back and undo the choices you made, but what do you do now? I think that these are the underlying themes, and the ostensible plot element of trying to open a bordello really disguised as a spa is the comic relief that keeps the story moving along from scene to scene. And there are some very funny bits related to that. But really, it's about these people. Now they are 20 years older. They're in middle age now. They're not young rebels any longer. And what do we do with ourselves? I mean, again, based upon irrevocable things that we did in the past.
Well, and that was kind of my question with the character growth. 20 years on, you come back and nothing is quite changed in the characters themselves.
Well, I think Mark has changed.
Mark has changed. Then he kind of draws back to what he was in Scotland once he returns.
He does, but not entirely. He's kind of, I mean, probably it's a bit like the whole AA thing about, you know, separating yourself from the environment in which you have became addicted. You know, and that's not just true of alcohol and other kinds of drugs. It's anything that you want to get away from and go away. You know, separate yourself. That's what he did. He moved to Amsterdam, lived there for 20 years. He came back, and he's faced with the lure of the old way of life again. There are many things in this movie that positive and negative that remind him of the past. He goes back to his old bedroom in his father's house, and there are his Iggy Pop records and David Bowie and the same wallpaper on the wall with trains on it that, you know, it's dangerous for him, but I get the feeling in watching the film that he overcomes all of this by the final scene.
Well, and at first I was confused as to, I understood how at the end of the first movie, you know, Mark, he goes off and steals the $16,000 from his friends. So I was wondering what the premise of this one would be, because you would think Mark wouldn't return directly to those friends that he stole his money from. But, you know, do you think that the original had a need for this sequel 20 years later?
I don't think that anybody was planning on anything like this 20 years later. But the sequel makes sense because Mark is trying to make amends. I mean, deliberately. He had no great reason to come back to Edinburgh. I mean, you know, maybe visit his dad or something. He could have snuck in under the cover of night and done that and left again. But he seemed to be very intent upon confronting his past and the people he left behind, the people whose lives he may have damaged. Again, I'm not really clear to what extent he was aware of how his former friends were living and what circumstances they were under. I think that he didn't know very much about their state of being, but he finds out soon enough. And I think that overall, he's trying to do an honorable thing.
Do you also think that T2 drew newer audiences to the original film before seeing the sequel?
I think so. I mean, it's always a question, do you need to see the original film before seeing a sequel? If you saw Trainspotting, you'll get more out of T2, I suppose. There are all kinds of references to the original movie threaded through it, which Trainspotting fans will marvel over, of course. I don't think it's really necessary to have seen the first movie to appreciate what T2 is all about.
Do you personally have a connection to the first film and enjoyed seeing the build-up to the second one?
I liked the second film better than the first film, if anything, and I don't know if that's a minority opinion or not, but I think that
I would agree with you, I think.
Yeah, the characters in T2 have a lot more to lose at this point in life, because when you're 19 or 18 or 20, whatever they were in 1996, from my own experience, you know, at that age, you know, death is a very abstract idea. You really have a foolish sense of fearlessness about things. But if you survive all of this, you are aware of the value of life and survival, the value of trying to establish or reestablish friendships and connections. So I think that these characters have a lot more, carry a lot more weight 20 years on than they did in the original film.
And also a big difference between the T1 and T2 is you can see similarities, but Danny Boyle's sense of directing, it's a little less, you know, fewer detours to a psychedelic trip or quicker transitions. And I felt this one was a little more even keeled.
Well, I think this is a very common characteristic of creative people of all sorts. As a writer, too, I think that 20 years ago, I was much more interested in trying to impress people with obscure references and unusual phraseology. And now I'm much more interested in clearly communicating whatever it is that's on my mind. And I think the same thing, if you look at the evolution of Danny Boyle as a director, I think you can see something very similar going on.
And what do you think of the actor's growth
Well, they're all out there doing things. Ian McGregor, you know, has became the big star out of this, and of course he was the main character, so it's not entirely surprising. Probably the character who had, and the actor for that matter, you know, who had the most, I think, potential for stardom, just again based on appearance, based upon, you know, the role he played in that movie, you know, some of the other characters in here, you know, would be ill-fated for the cover of People magazine in comparison. So I guess I'm not surprised by the outcome of it. And I'm sure that they had a great old time getting back together again and doing this. And I think there's a bit of that comes through in the film, that they really enjoyed working with each other in this storyline once again.
And I think, aside from maybe it's a differing opinion from the mainstream, but it wasn't really Mark's movie. I really liked Ewan Bremmer, the actor who played Spud. Spud's mm-hmm. character, I thought this was kind of his film. This is his redemption story in a way.
Well, it is too. I mean, really, all of them are significant. I guess the friend who escapes from prison basically is almost entirely a comic relief element.
A scary one.
scary comic relief. But even he has a few profound points to make. I mean, the world changes even if we don't. I mean, he says near the end of the movie, a moment of realization for a person who hasn't realized much of anything in the past 20 years, apparently. So, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, that Spud, kind of this tragic, innocent, you know, bungling kind of a person, does offer a kind of alternate center of gravity to the film.
So overall, you know, we have the theme of yes to life, yes to drugs, yes to whatever. Should audience say yes to this film?
I think audiences should say yes to the film because it's a very funny movie, a very meaningful movie, I think, and one that's not afraid, not unlike the first movie, of smashing stereotypes, demolishing cliches, and running roughshod over social or political correctness of any kind.
Well, Dave, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Lake Effect film contributor Dave Lurson is the arts and entertainment editor for the Shepherd Express Weekly and the author of its I Hate Hollywood blog. Trainspotting 2 is now streaming on Amazon Video and on iTunes. It will be released on DVD and Blu-ray on June 27th.